What's up, everybody? It's the phase of the episode where I come in and I tell you it's the Hobby with Cage, and you know, it's how many episodes I've done, and people flip out about that, and why am I counting the episodes? But I realized that I miss having a partner here for one specific reason. It's because if I'm here doing this myself, I can't grab this delicious 2-liter bottle of soda and just take a big swig of it, because then the whole thing is dead air. So I decided I'm just going to bring somebody in so that I could just take a sip of soda. He could talk for a couple minutes and say hi. And, you know, you may recognize him.
Hi. What's up, Luca Nation?
Dude, look who it is.
Yeah, what's up, Luca Nation? Thank you for having me back, brother.
Woo! So, long time coming. Long time coming. How you doing, my friend? How's life treating you?
I'm a ghost. I'm a ghost. You're bringing all the ghosts back out. So, like, this is Ghost with Cage.
I'm
honored to kick it off, but
nobody kicks off an episode like you.
It's true. There's a few in the hobby. I had some topics for you. I definitely have one for you.
Prepared, but you ready?
You invited me on, so
one for you, yeah, and then you can do all yours. How's your Giannis investments going?
Do you want to talk about that? Just like in general, because when I made the post, the hobby's uninvestable and all that stuff, it actually happened before I saw what happened with the Edwards market. Mm-hmm. And did you see the silvers? They went from 500 to people are selling them for $1,500.
Yep. I saw a PSA 9 blue for $2,000. The regular base 10s were $120. The last one I saw sold for over 340, almost 350 I saw one sell for. So yeah, I mean, you know.
If we're comparing like apples to apples to what happened back 2-3 years ago, that is kind of what you want to see, because he checks all the boxes in the short term and long term, right? Like, everyone always said like Edwards is next man up, but it's like next man up, he has to perform at some point. And then what people have seen in this postseason, for prices to double in 2 weeks over, they swept the Suns and they're 2-0 on Denver. That's kind of that like short term that was happening in August 2020. Remember, Tyler Hero was going off and all that stuff. But Edwards has a ton of like long term potential. People love him on camera. People love like his sayings. So the hobby's back.
So the different player, back, right? Different player, but it's someone who you were a fan of, right? Obviously, different style of play. You know, different player, different person entirely. But let's just say that Edwards goes on and wins a championship this year. And he also puts an MVP. And he's got this great upward trajectory. It looks like he's going to be the best player. He's going to be the face of the league. He's going to be the GOAT. He's going to be all this stuff. And his cards have gone up because of that. Isn't that where we were with Giannis? Wasn't that exactly what we were saying? Like, he's a young kid. He came into his own. And he even had a lot more going for him because he wasn't this highly sought-after player. And the cards that he had, there weren't as many of, and there wasn't as much produced. So the pop was lower. The supply was lower for the demand. And even that, even all those things he had going for him, and he was, you know, the champ and, you know, going to win again and all this, it's very difficult to do that. And I find it odd, and maybe you can tell me because it's sort of what your post is that – you know, we repeat the same kind of behavior. Maybe it's a psychology thing, right? Because, you know, here it is with Edwards. The real bump is because now people think they're going to beat Denver. Like, I think people were even, you know, gun shy to pull the trigger and pay for Edwards because you're like, the Nuggets are going to beat him. But now up two and coming back home, people think, oh, he's at least getting to the Western Conference Finals. That's, you know, setting a floor. It's the same stuff we've heard over and over.
Did Edwards have a run-up, though, like Giannis? That was kind of the first – when you were talking – that was the first thing that came to my mind is, as much as we've talked about Edwards being next man up, I don't think his cards ran similar to Jokic or Giannis. Like, if you compare his cards to Luka, which is a decent comparison, probably similar supply-demand economics of those two guys, they're actually cheaper than Luka. This last week, he's probably surpassed him. Yeah. So Edwards hasn't had a run. Like, we've loved Edwards for 2 years, but this is his first true run-up, and I've owned some of his cards, so I kind of monitor his market.
I think if you look, Edwards was higher because his stuff came out sort of, you know, during the peak, during high prices, came down because it came down with everything, right? And he was not him. He wasn't, you know, this guy that everybody's holding out right now, and I think
his cards came out peak 2022, right? He was 2021 draft pick.
2021.
And the way Prism and Panini makes cards,
2022, I assume, is when the principal.
You gotta remember, it was him and LaMelo. You remember what LaMelo's stuff was selling for? Edwards' stuff was selling pretty close to that also. And, you know, we're talking about, I think it was 2020, 2021 for that year, you know, because, I mean, I think that's what it was. It was 2021. Because, I mean, think about it, like Cade Cunningham, Paolo Banchero, Wemby. Like, it's that many classes back. He's before those guys. So, I mean, it's definitely during peak time. And, I mean, you're talking about, you know, people were paying big money for those silvers, you know, the number cards, and like everything, it came down. And I just went through those names here because, you know, Wemby.
When are you making your sell post?
My what?
Like, you have an honorary post.
My traditional sell.
Jalen Hurts ran up, and then we see Cage's big head. He just freshly shaved, probably got a haircut, wearing a suit, and he's yelling sell. He's just yelling sell, sell, sell. Or is that coming with Edwards? Because I'm hearing it.
It will. 100%. 100% will come. But you're right. It hasn't run. And the difference, right, is when I was talking about Hurts, for example, right? Hurts' stuff, it did one of these, like a straight one of these. Edwards, it looks more like Meta stock, where it was high, came down, and now it's just recovering kind of where it is. It's not one of these, right? And when I'm saying sell Hurts, it's because, you know, what's Hurts' upside? Edwards is a little different. I mean, Edwards' upside
like
is...
Edwards.
I always liked the kid. Remember we talked about him when he was in a movie? Right? He was in the basketball movie with Hernan Gomez, right? He played Kermit. He played Leo. He played a great character. You know, and he plays... So I've heard here in New York, with, you know, talk radio, it's... Why is Brunson not getting the love that Edwards? I mean, he's scoring more points, and look what he's doing. Well, because Edwards plays an appealing style of basketball to the eyes. You know, you and I, we beat each other up over Giannis. We also did on the Joker, because my take was watching him play is like watching me play. Obviously, that was an oversimplification. No one wants to watch me do anything physically. Trust me. He is a stud of a basketball player. But he's not high-flying. He's not Jordan-esque. And Edwards has that style to him, that flair to him that people like.
I'm sure you watch these games with Ian.
And I do.
You're a New Yorker, so you're probably pumped for the Knicks. What's your take on these playoffs? And then what would Ian's like kind of like kid watching this? Because I'm sure he has some of the cards.
Ian was rooting for Philly.
And he loves Maxey. That was Cage came back and that was one of the best experiences you've ever had. You talked about Maxey the person.
Yep.
He like lights up a room, right?
Yeah. I mean, just a nice guy, smile. And you could tell, just look at the pictures that I post, right? It wasn't like a forced thing. I mean, he's like, you know, he's like patting him on the head. He's getting, you know, he's all smiles. You know, Ian left that. Like, he's the one going to school telling his kids, like, when the Knicks won, he's like, I'm going to get cooked in gym class tomorrow because I'm telling all my friends who are all of a sudden Knicks fans. They can't name a Nick, but they're all – that Maxey's the best and he's going to have a great series and Philly's going to win. So, you know, it's been a fun little interesting ride here. You know, I tell him, you know, look at the guys. Look at Patrick Ewing sitting there. Look at Marbury. Like, you got some Knicks history. This is – but in all honesty, what do I think of the playoffs? I want to hear what you think because you were always good at picking – I mean, we could talk hockey too. You nailed the Avalanche that one time. But but honestly, I think it's the West, man. And the West has just been great all year. Obviously, the Celtics have a lot of wins, but it's against an inferior conference. And I think, you know, you just have to assume right now that unless they have another injury, that the Celtics are going to come out of the East. And I don't think they have the horses to compete with any of the top teams in the West. And if the Knicks happen to find a way...
Odds disagree with you. You know that, right?
What'd you say?
The odds completely disagree with that.
I know.
Which is...
The Knicks and the
Celtics are 45% chance to win.
Well, I think for right now, the odds are that way because the Celtics have the clearest path to the finals.
Makes
sense. In the West, you still don't know if it's going to be Oklahoma City or it's going to be, you know, the Nuggets up to this point. So I think part of the odds right now of betting the champ is because you got to figure the Celtics are like odds on to at least make the finals. That gets put into the odds. But like the Knicks' whole game is offensive rebounding, right? And they're having more trouble against Indiana than they did against Philly. They will have significantly more trouble against some of these teams in the West that are much more active, that play with pace, that have, you know, Rudy Gobert and Karl Anthony Towns in the middle. Like, you know, Hartenstein, nice little player, but I mean, he's not going to get 3 rebounds per possession, you know?
Josh Hart is the most athletic player in the series, where the Timberwolves have like 7 of them.
Correct. He might not crack.
Dibs is a psycho. He plays. Yeah. Do you know how many minutes Hart plays?
They played a whole game.
The whole game.
They literally played I saw in the Indiana series at one point, the bench of Indiana had 46 points and the Knicks bench had one.
Dibs is a psycho, but it's kind of like. So did you see this trend on Twitter where it was like, we're done with the 90s? Have you seen that?
Yes.
As someone who's lived through the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and up to today, is it true? Like, do you agree with what they're saying? Because I think it's one of those things where the internet has no, you know, kind of like understanding of it's both are true, right? The players today are a lot better, just up and down. But Jordan, Malone, you know, Barkley, Olajuwon, even Isaiah Thomas, those are still really good players. Like, people kind of like,
The game evolves, right? I mean, the game always evolves. The physical conditioning evolves. You know, what happens in the game evolves. Like, if you watch the game in the 90s, like, you know, I played basketball in the 90s, you know, just street or in high school or in junior high school or in league games. If you had a coach, right, and a coach was coaching you from the sidelines and you had a two-on-one break and a three-on-one break, 100 out of 100 coaches told you to take the ball to the basket, get the easy shot, put the basket in. If someone on that break stopped at the three-point line and popped a three-pointer,
Coach Carter,
you'd be benched. You'd be benched.
You're coming out of the game, Samuel.
You're out. What are you doing? Why are you shooting from all the way back there when you got a breakaway and you had an easy basket? The analytics have changed it, right? The, you know, just the pace of play is different. The ability to move around freely has changed. Like, Josh Hart is a perfect example of somebody who would not be doing anything like he's doing in the night, right? For two reasons. Number one, he couldn't move around in the paint like that. He'd be getting elbows every play. But more importantly, because the three is being chucked up much more, because, you know, obviously analytics tell you make 40% of threes instead of 55% of twos, you're going to score more points. But because there's so many more deeper shots and threes, the offensive rebounds are everywhere. And the offenses move. It used to just be isolation, stand still, pass the ball around. Everyone's moving, and that creates even more opportunities for someone like Hart to get an offensive. It's we could spend probably a week talking about the differences in the game. But yes, it's not just the 90s, right? Didn't we hear somebody, what was it, JJ Redick say that like Bob Cousy was playing against plumbers, right? It's the same. Every generation wants to say that the generation before them kind of, you know, wouldn't make it in this game, and it's true. Because the game is not
before my year kind of break. I watched the JJ Redick show. You mocked me a few times.
Yes, of course.
I gotta tell you, his evolution from what that show was to this new show with LeBron, Mind the Game. Man, let me ask you this. Would you say I was complimentary of JJ?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, cool.
Definitely.
The amount of pandering that is going on right now by JJ is wild. It's just freaking wild. I love JJ. I think he's got a great basketball mind. But the pandering
is gunning for the Lakers job.
Cool.
That's what it is. I mean, other than that, it doesn't make sense. Fine. Meanwhile, the only show I want to see from LeBron is the Taco Tuesday one with him and Jason Sudeikis that they, you know, they do the Taco Bell. They should actually
make curses a lot.
That'd be fun.
Yeah. Curses a lot. I never knew that.
I mean, listen. For the bronze testicles that are out there listening, I mean, do me a favor and take a look at what Edwards' regular season stats were this year and what LeBron's regular season stats were this year. And LeBron had more rebounds per game. He had more assists per game. And the points are within like tenths of a point.
People love their stats, numbers.
I know the game's different. Just number junkies. I mean, LeBron, I'm doing this for the LeBron's testicles that are out there that they love it, right? But LeBron, you know, I mean, his numbers at 39 or however old he is now, I mean, they were right in line, if not better than what the second coming of Michael Jordan.
People don't get it though. LeBron is amazing.
Yeah,
but he takes plays off.
He does,
and then he's not held to the same standard. So they're like, dude, look at LeBron's numbers. We're like, we know he's really great, guys. Like, we're not arguing with you.
Yep.
But if he lets Aaron Gordon get 15 dunks, can you really call him a great defender?
No.
Or is he just an incredible athlete?
No.
Like, one of the biggest.
Not to mention D'Angelo Russell, right? Should be a great player. And, you know, Rui Hachimura and all these guys. If LeBron was really that great, These guys would get better. He would make his teammates better. And has he done that?
You remember that one? That was one of the best posts. That one was posted, I think, while we were doing an episode, and I came back to a lot of comments.
A lot of comments.
Instagram comments are like that dopamine hit, huh? I don't think our mind knows the difference between like a hit of coke, you know, alcohol, or, you know, comments, whether they're positive or negative.
I don't know. The last time you and I did coke, it was very different than the Instagram comments. It was
well, like, you know what I'm saying? So, all right. You always reference.
Yep.
It's kind of getting old, but I'll let it slide. These DMs. Cage, if you were to listen to Cage, his DMs are flooded.
They are.
He even created a separate segment for his DMs.
I did.
Who the hell is in these DMs?
A lot of people. New people. I get a lot
of. What are they telling you? What are these rumors that they keep disclosing in your DM?
I get DM rumors, definitely. But I also, listen, my DMs for the last day have been mostly about you.
Okay.
I mean, and your
state of affairs.
No, your post, because people are like, you know, is he coming back? A lot of people, so we get a lot of people who are like, wow, you know, that's a, he seemed to be learning. I even sent you a picture of one of the DMs, right? And you're like, oh, great. You know, like, but some of them are like, that's Captain Obvious. What the hell is this? Well, I don't need him to say this. Some of them give me shit for agreeing, which, by the way, it's funny. You come on and quote my comments saying I'm bringing up ghosts and the whole thing. So, I mean, in the last 48 hours, I took a shot at you and also posted that I agree. But people just, they pick which one they want to post. But no, the DMs, generally speaking, were like, all right, that's an interesting take. What does he really mean? A lot of people disagreed, saying that if you hustle, that if you're at shows, and if I got this DM probably a dozen times, that this is a wrong take. If last year you were buying Edwards and Brunson and putting your money in the right spot, then you wouldn't think like this. You would be making money. A lot of people said that. And I said, listen, I don't think he would disagree with that. I think the post was really just, it's modern card production and what's being made overall, and sort of like the lean towards breaking and, you know, and that kind of stuff. I think that's more the point he was making, but I'll leave it to you. To someone who says to you, hey, you're wrong. There is money to be made here. You just have to know where to invest. You just have to know where to go. And someone like you, who is I Soy Boy, I think someone called you in the DMs. Flipper Dipper, someone called you in the DMs. They said, if someone like him,
soy he came because in, of the color of soy.
I don't even know what a soy boy is, but someone called you a soy boy. You know,
I think what's cool about the internet, it's not even always what you say, it's how you say it. It was just a really succinct statement. I didn't think anything too much of it. Reaction to the card ladder post of like Jokic prices versus Edwards prices. And like, obviously, like, what's the internet has so much data, you can't go into like rabbit holes of everything.
Yep.
But like, when you just like open card ladder and you're like, wow, look at how many different Edwards parallels there are. So like, I know it says Mojo out of 25, but like, does the general market care that it's a Mojo out of 25? Because if they're priced out of a Mojo 25, they're just going to go for an orange out of 49. And if not, they'll go for a purple out of 99. Maybe they don't like the color purple. That's my favorite color. You've elegantly said that a while ago. Purple mix.
Purple wave. I said your parallel is a purple wave. That's what I said.
This hurts so much still, actually. but like, it was just that, because like gold, kind of obviously, it's like its own world of gold. You're not going to see a ton of Edwards golds come out. You know, you'll maybe see one or two.
I pulled one at Panini Digital, if that counts.
No, you didn't.
Of course. Oh, I did.
At National 2022.
Yeah, remember
when you were ripping packs at midnight?
And everybody else was making a fortune, and I'm convincing you to buy Panini Digital.
Tell me that I mean, how addictive is that, right? They're just praying.
Yeah.
No, there wasn't just it was that simple. It was just the it was so much easier to invest in
right? So I think really what you're saying is so it's a combination. You know, the Joker's a different story, right? Because he just didn't have the cards. Right. Almost everybody now is gonna have the cards. I mean, maybe Brunson's a different story because people don't realize this, who were just like buying Brunson. Brunson was a second round pick. Remember my love for Devontae Graham, who was a second-round pick? Brunson was picked the pick before Devontae Graham. Like, he was not supposed to be this big guy. So I'm sure because of that, there's a little bit less of supply of him. You didn't know that?
No.
I'm 99% sure that Brunson was picked by Dallas the pick before Devontae Graham was picked. And Devontae wasn't picked by the Hornets. He was traded to the Hornets in a draft night trade.
But how amazing is this situation for him? He's playing with his two brothers, too. Like, these guys played college ball together.
Yeah.
And then Randall gets hurt. That's the best thing that could have ever happened to the
Knicks.
I mean,
a lot of New York talk radio about that, too, about how the team is better without Randall. Get rid of Randall.
It changed the whole system. You have Josh Hart was coming off the bench earlier.
Now, so we'll talk about Brunson in a second, and Hart is great. We'll talk about that. But just for your point, right? So half of it is that the supply is less for someone like Joker because he just wasn't there. He wasn't, you know, he was selected during a Taco Bell commercial, remember? So, you know, the manufacturers weren't making the cards. Plus the year, it was pre-COVID. It was pre-boom. There wasn't as much being made. You know, the production numbers were less. So that is a good thing for his cards. But even that, even with him winning, what, three out of 4 years of MVP and winning a championship, and people thought he potentially could win another one this year, and he still may, his card prices, as opposed to Edwards, who's really just the flavor of the week, you know, he's not holding his own. And I think the point you're trying to make to people who are thinking about going out and buying Edwards now, which I want to hammer here, I want to hit this because it's a lot of stuff we talked about. And it's a change, I think, in your mindset after seeing this, right? After watching the hobby from a little while. And it's like, as much as you want to say, bet Edwards, as much as you want to say Edwards is probably going to win a championship this year, buying the cards is not sports betting. And even though he may go out there and score 40 per game and win a championship now, because of the supply of cards, it's not an apples to apples, not even close to an apples to apples comparison with sports betting like we wanted it to be, or like people thought it was a couple years ago. Because there is purple waves and orange and green and mojo and just so much supply that even if you can't get the gold or you can't get the mojo out of 25, there is something for you to buy at every price range. And if there's something for everyone to buy, then there's enough supply to meet the demand and the price doesn't go. Talk to me.
If you want to hold Edwards for 15 years, right? Because that's the cool thing about him. Like, people love his vibe now. They see potential, but they're like, this guy – He could be a long-term hold, right?
Could be. Yeah.
What would you want of this? Like, what would you want to own as put on your collector hat? Would it be his first jersey? Would it be his NT? Would it be gold? What would you want to own?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like two pieces, right? I'd like one non-auto and one auto. So I'd like maybe a nice low-numbered flawless card. You know what I mean? Even though it's not probably game used, you know, one of those, but that's the best that's available from a licensed card, jersey, auto. From you know, for his rookie. And I'd like a low numbered prism card. If I couldn't do a gold, you know, I would try to do as close to that as I could, you know. Gold's obviously gonna be expensive as heck.
And the cynic in you, the cage in you, I actually have a Michael Cage card
right here. Michael Cage, I love it. Skybox premium?
Yeah.
One of my clients gave me a bunch of cards.
Nice.
It's funny how people who don't know cards, like, they always think quantity, right? Like, I have so many of them, and I'm like, I just need one. Because there was nothing good in here. But it was cool. Like, it was
fun to go through. That's, you know,
yeah, it was fun to go through. The SPX actually was a pretty cool card for me.
That's cool. Yeah.
Game worn.
I mean, no, so now, I mean, you're
not for you.
I would, as far as like an item, so Anthony Edwards just had a jersey sell in Golden for like, I think it was like $120,000. Right. And it was his fourth game ever. You know, he had a good game, but it's not his debut. It's not, you know, whereas, I mean, look, I'm not comparing again apples to apples, but like the Kobe Achilles jersey, like Mamba mentality, the start of it, that's like $1 million or it's up to like 1-2. Like, you know, $100,000 for a jersey. And the tough part with game use, right, is unless you're buying something where it's like his finals jersey where he won a championship or a debut jersey. I mean, I know this is close to a debut jersey, but like if you really think he's a viable long-term hold because he's going to play for 15 years, is there really a shortage of his game use jersey, especially now in the era where they're switching jerseys at halftime? They might even wear more than one jersey per game. But
from an investment standpoint, you'll get one benefit that maybe that NT doesn't have, or the flawless.
Actually,
yeah, price discovery.
Yeah.
Because you're riding not just the Edwards wave and maybe you're buying the right jersey. You're also riding all this marketing push that seems to be behind, like, I'm going to ask you about the irrevocable bid.
Okay.
Heard about it?
Yes.
Am I catching you? Are you going to get mad at me because I that you might not be prepared. And as a lawyer, you yell at people who
You used to do, you know, like the coffee with Cage, right? It was just, I wasn't prepared. You know,
you get price discovery on your side with all of this marketing behind Game Used. Mm-hmm. That like, okay, it runs on auction. It sells for $350,000, right?
Yep.
And you just sold your Michael Jordan PSA 10 last year. And you're like, Edwards is Jordan's son, or at least his cousin. You know, I believe in him. Do you move your Fleer PSA 10 money into like his Game Used jersey from this year and say, not only do I believe in the player, I think these Game Used jerseys, we don't know their true value just collectively.
Right. I mean, listen, you could say that. I think really you could take it two different ways as far as the price discovery goes. The auction houses, the media companies, the whoever else, they need to expand. I think Sotheby's is bringing out like a new kind of auctions of like Game Used jersey. I think Edwards has got a bunch of jerseys in, or at least one. I think they're doing like 75 jerseys. And they're going to start doing like, you know, Game Used and the whole deal. And, you know, it's what we talked about with tickets. It's what we talked about with video games. It's what we talked about with, you know, the famous line of trying to make fetch happen. Remember that, you know, from Mean Girls, right? And Game Used, it could go either way, right? The entire market is propped up by a handful of people, which if it's something that sticks and if there's marketing money behind it, like you said, and if these auction houses are really getting behind it, it doesn't take too many more participants in it to really make it explode. And then you're right. You get the benefit of this price discovery. You get the benefit of these things potentially going up in value as long as you have the right ones, the right items. Who knows what the right items are?
An irrevocable bid. So mm-hmm. Darren Revelle's company just wrote about this collect. An irrevocable bid guarantees that should his or her bid be the only bid, they'll pay for the item. So with like the jersey, they started at $1 million. But before they listed it at $1 million, they found someone to guarantee that they'll pay $1 million for that jersey, right?
Yep. Yep.
And any amount above $1 million, that irrevocable bidder, that one person or that trust, I guess, gets a piece of the net outcome. So they're like, we'll provide you with a floor and we get like a 20, I think it's 25 to 35%, they'll quote me. It probably changes depending on the item of the upside. Cool.
I think it's between 15 and 25%, I think is what I heard.
But it'll probably change between the, like, depending on the items.
It's an interesting thing, right? Because, I mean, I understand it. I mean, you know, we can make fun, but like, you know, Marino used to talk about B-Wick. It's sort of that, but that's this is a little more public. Remember, B-Wick was like,
you know. John Wick?
Yeah, John Wick, exactly. Mm-hmm. But it's all attempts to make sure that items transact and that you get liquidity and that you get the best price possible for your seller. I mean, think about this, right? If the seller had a number in mind, let's say they are ready to go and sell this for $1 million. All right. There's a lot of different ways this could go, right? So let's say you came to me with a Kobe jersey and you said, you know what, Cage, get me $1 million for this and I'm a happy camper. All right. If I were, you know, an unscrupulous person and I took this out to market and I was able to get 1.5, I could just give you the $1 million you said you're happy with and keep $500,000. Well, that may
you're
be
the auction house in this scenario,
or like the people working at that? It could be an auction house or it could be anything. Well, let's just say it's not going to auction. There's a million different ways to sell an item, right?
Okay.
Right. And I don't have a fiduciary duty to get you said to me, you can sell this as long as I get $1 million in my pocket. That's the agreement we have here.
You're an agent working on my behalf.
Correct. I could take it to an auction house. I could sell it however I want. And if the next day I get $1.5 million offer, right, I can keep the $500,000 and just pay you the $1 million. That middleman happens all the time, right? At shows during the boom, people would come up to me and say, hey, that card you have, would take $100 for it. And I'm like, yeah, sure. They say, okay, hang on a second. And they would walk across the room and see if they could sell that, take a picture, see if they could sell it for $120. Okay, if you could do it, go right ahead. I told you my
price. Happens in the housing market too, like wholesalers.
Correct.
Right. So like they'll get a house under contract, but never shell out any money. Yeah. And then they go find a different buyer and they're just making. But they're also taking on the risk because they have the contract. If they don't sell it, go on.
Who got screwed there? You could say nobody because you came in and said, you know what? I want $1 million, right? Now, I got you $1 million. Everybody's happy. You don't even get to know what I got, right? You're happy, none the wiser, all right? Now, the B-Wick type of stuff, the you know the floating contingency type of stuff could also be you could come to me and say, you know what? At $1 million, I'll take, you can get 10%. But if you get $1.1 million, I'll give you 10% on the first million and 20%. And if you get a million two, it's 30%. You get a and it's the more you get, the more I make as the middleman. You could do that too, but you still retain some of that upside. Okay. Here, what the irrevocable bid process is instead of the buyer setting a reserve, which nobody wants, right? Nobody likes it. You want to know, it's like with car auctions, with everything else. You want to know that when this is offered, if I bid enough for it, I win it. Not, oh, I bid, but I might not win. Like nobody, unless you know you're taking it home, right? You're not going to go balls to the wall. You're not going to actually go and bid. So this is a way.
Two asses on one toilet seat.
I've used that quote right? A bunch of times. Nicely done.
One ass on two toilet seat.
It's two asses, one toilet seat. It doesn't work. It makes a mess. But so think about it. Now, no reserve. But you need to get somebody who comes in and places that initial bid, right? So you want to maintain upside for the person who's consigning it. They're happy with the million. They still get a huge potential upside there. It's that person who basically guarantees that the reserve is going to be met, that irrevocable bid. They're going to pay. If there's no other bids, they get it. They pay. If there are more bids,
that person gets a ton of benefit. That's now the person that's winning, in my opinion, the most.
The bidder?
I would call him a wholesaler, bidder. But the irrevocable bidder. The auction house comes to him with the best items. Mm-hmm. He or she get to say, yeah, I'll pay wholesale price. And if something happens, they get that price. If not, they still benefit on the upside. And over time, that upside is going to pay for future items that they're going to want.
It depends on whether or not it's really a wholesale price, right? Because you got to figure that it's one of those things where I don't know if it gets another bid. You know what I mean? Who knows? And that's part of the price discovery stuff we were talking about. But if this person's willing to pay 1.2, which is what it is, then there's no downside for them to do it. They win the item. It's great. The upside is if it gets bid up now and they don't win it, there's money for them, right? They get a piece. They get, you know, 15%, 25%, whatever it is. It's listen.
Your boy Rob G is the one that I think is going to be benefiting. He's going to have a credit line with Golden calling Cage and saying, is this worth the money? Cage is going to give him the best advice in the market, free of charge too, which is amazing.
I mean, remember, Golden's doing it, and Golden is now under the eBay umbrella. That's a publicly traded company.
Is that right?
Yeah. So,
Over the shenanigans, over the burning of the FLIR packs in the backyard.
I mean, there's going to be some auditing there, I would imagine. But yes, there's got to be some additional scrutiny to this because it is an interesting thing. But really, just to put a fine mark on your irrevocable bid kind of thing, it is auction houses, just like you said with the cards, that there's no shortage of supply and the demand is not even enough to meet the supply. Auction houses, there's a lot of auction houses and there's a lot of stuff coming to these auction houses. I may or may not have heard from some auction houses at recent shows that they're not even allowed to talk about the pipeline. They have such a robust pipeline of cards and items coming out that they can't even talk about these mind-blowing items that are coming in June, July, and August because it's actually going to hurt the April, May sales.
Gotcha.
You don't want to.
I have a Kobe jersey coming in July. I don't want to let the general public know that I'm auctioning one now because that's now.
Because Joe Bitter might say, hey, I'm going to save my money for that. Why would I buy this? I'd rather have that. And then you're screwing over the people who consigned in. So the point here is if there's this much supply and there's so many auctions and so many items, I don't begrudge an auction house for coming up with a creative way, a different way of trying to create some liquidity, create some excitement around an auction, to try to offer a consigner a different way of getting their item out there and, you know, potentially having some upside with a downside cap without having to do a reserve on it, which, I mean, basically is a reserve. But it's enticing someone to come in and hit that reserve. Right? Yeah. All right. Ready?
Biggest client. Okay, go ahead. No. Well, I was going to ask you something. Your biggest win from the last year and your biggest loss. Now, that could be financially, that could be a friendship, that could be a relationship, that could be a piece of knowledge. What's one thing from the last year, right? Because May, basically a year ago, was like mint and kind of when we paused the show. What's been the biggest upside and then the biggest downside in the hobby for you?
I don't know. You could argue that some of my biggest hobby downsides turned into potential upsides. I mean, the biggest, I mean, if you're talking about specific cards, we could take it that way first, right? I mean, because I'm trying to sell, you know, some of my higher priced cards, selling them last year, I wound up selling, you know, items at what I consider basically the bottom. You know what I mean? The bottom of the market. Because some of the cards that I've sold.
Well, you consider what's factually true. Because that's, you could just look at a chart.
So for one item, I definitely sold at the bottom. Like, you can look it up, and my card sold for the lowest of any public sale over the last bunch of years. And as soon as I hit that, the next one up.
Cage prints that out. He puts it on his wall, just throws darts at it. He's like, you mother.
But I've moved that money into the market, and that's done well for me. And, you know, so, I mean, I think it's done better for me than the cards have as well. And, you know, it's an interesting thing. Nobody wants to hear about that because, you know, you're supposed to just hold the cards and, you know, rub the cards on yourself. And even if they're not something you want to hold anymore, you're a collector. So you gotta keep the cards and bathe with them and take them in the shower with you, because that's, other than if they're not, you cancel because you're not a real collector. But I still have a shit ton of cards. But I don't just say to people, go ahead and audit your collection. I do it myself. You know, I mean, you know, what are you, if you're not in love with this card anymore, move it. You know, I still have the Shaq card that I love. I still have the Ken Griffey Jr. card that I love. I fell victim a couple of times to the same thing that a lot of people do, and I talk about it, is those hot cards, those ones that are being pushed on you, those ones that are hype, the Skybox Rubies and the PMGs. Now, there are people out there who are like, those aren't hype. PMGs are the best cards in the world. How do you get rid of that? Okay, the PMG doesn't speak to me, right? Because by the time PMGs came out, I was drunk in college. You know, I was focusing on, you know, college and potentially law school, some years law school, and getting a career and becoming an adult. And I was not buying cards then. I was buying cards before they were numbered. You know, I was buying Shaq's rookie cards. You know,
what I mean? Licensed Montanas. That was an amazing post. I had no idea that card was unlicensed.
I mean, different kind of unlicensed than what we're dealing with now. But yeah, I mean, it was not totally licensed because it didn't have the team logo anymore. They did not have it.
How is it different?
Because back then that was the only option of cards, right? There was no fully licensed version. So the difference here is, you know, if you talk about like a Wemby card in NBA Chrome, in basketball Chrome, Chrome basketball instead of NBA Chrome, there is a Prism card. There is a fully licensed Prism Wemby. The difference now becomes autos. That was what I had a lot of conversations at DMs about this. I said, you're right. Very different hobby, very different time. That was the only option. Whereas, you know, the Fanatics Chrome will have a Wemby now. But if you're just talking about rookie autos, that Fanatics product, you know, unlicensed, is going to be the only option. That will be the Montana rookie. If you are a rookie auto collector, that Fanatics product, that basketball Chrome, will be the only rookie auto for Wemby.
Do you remember in the 90s when people go door-to-door selling encyclopedias?
Yes. My parents bought one.
Right. Like, that was kind of how knowledge Britannica was, like, before the internet, right on, like, the cusp of the internet, was the way, like, you would have encyclopedias in your house by letter.
You do, like, a report on it. You open it up.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I cut out a picture.
Why that is important is that's knowledge over years consolidated, right? The hobby has knowledge over years distributed, fragmented. So you get comments like that. Oh,
he finally gets it.
Well, how else is knowledge, like, how else would you obtain knowledge, experience, or learning, or hearing from someone, right?
Well, there is a hobby encyclopedia now, actually. It is
go ahead.
Hard Investing for Dummies, and you should pick it up. I mean, Jeff,
I was gonna ask if anyone's read it, like, it could be done well. Like, just because Jeff Wilson doesn't mean everything he does sucks. Maybe he'll hit one out of the park. But, like, has anyone read it? Like, it could be, like, those dummy books, they're prime in, like, Barnes and Nobles. Like, those are, if he does it well, I haven't read it.
I'm curious,
people could leave some comments. I read it. I didn't. It was good. It was stupid.
I would love to hear it if anybody has read. I personally have not read the book.
Because it's not, we can't always hate the messenger if the message is solid. We can still hate the messenger even if the message is solid.
You've been away too long. They'll hate you no matter what. That's just the way it works.
You have to look at the message in and of itself and the objective. Is this an honest message? Am I learning something from it? Can whoever the target audience of this book is, are they benefiting?
All right. biggest loss on the cards, easy. I've talked about that. You know, just some of these big cards. You know, I wish I had some of them back, and that's an important thing because those will be the cards that I buy. Oh, dude, like every card I owned, I wish I had back. But I, you know, it'd be a long list. Like that Montana, I don't have that Montana anymore, and I didn't sell that at a loss. I sold that at a gain.
You could get that card back.
I'll get it back, but well done, because you're 100% right. Even though that is a Mount Rushmore Grail card, it's not a card that I need to hold right now because it is a card I can get back. It's not a one of one. It's not something that's so rare that it never comes up. There's one at a lot of shows. There's only 120 of them or so, something like that on the pop. It's not that rare, but it's also pretty common for a rare card. And I could also just buy a 9 and be happy with that. That was one of yours.
No shot he'll do that. That's him. He's pandering. He's JJ Redicking. Rapid fire.
He's JJ Redicking. All right, dude. No, but so you've been away for about a year.
Yeah.
All right? Be honest. Miss it?
Try to.
Don't miss it. Miss pieces of it. Are there parts of it sports. Where?
Huh? I love sports. Yeah. And I think we all love money.
Yep.
Or like the pursuit of money or value sometimes. So for sure, be more specific. What do I miss?
Well, I mean, the easy
some part stuff is silly.
So let's talk about that. What are parts you don't miss? What are parts that, you know, I mean, you used to have this great question. If you were the CEO of Fanatics, if you were the CEO of this, what would you do? If you're the CEO of the hobby and you really had the ability to, like, you know, change it, what's silly? What's one silly thing that you would take away? And it's important, right? It sounds like an odd question, right? But remember, we're taking this from a hobby standpoint, not a business standpoint, not an industry standpoint. This is a hobby where to 10X it, you got to bring in kids. You got to bring in young people who are going to grow it over the next decades as they start to work and as they start to have disposable income, right? And if they come in and they see stupidity, I don't know. Take my kid, for example. They see stupidity. They might want to stay here. We just need to get a Skibbity Ohio Rizzler card, and we'd buy every one of them. And I don't know what the hell I just said. But shoot.
I'll make it simple because we could go into like demos. But
compare whatever you want. It lets me drink more soda.
Compare an Andrew type of demo, which is, let's call it 25 to 38-year-old who entered the hobby right around COVID. That person. Versus the same exact age group, but entered the hobby in 2015.
Okay.
Well, what's silly to me is that people don't understand that money moves the world. What's silly to the group from like that made all their money, like I would call them retired 30-year-olds, right? Like, there's people who've probably sold their collection who still don't have like kids or dependents. They have like a runway of probably 10 years. So they're looking at it like, you guys are idiot. You guys are like flowers for Algernon, like chasing Charlie in the maze.
Yeah.
So for that demo that made their money in the rum up, they're like, it's silly that you guys are chasing money.
Yes.
My demo, looking at them, they're like, it's silly that you're not chasing money.
Right. I can't do what you did. I can't just buy anything. It's almost like, which I think is a little unfair, but it's almost like the post that I see from millennials. I'm going to paint with a broad brush again because it's not just millennials, but I got to say something. Where it's like, of course grandma is able to do what she wants with her life. She bought her house in 1952 for a bag of almonds. You know, it's like, so, you know, like, I get it. I understand what you're saying. Flush it out.
And then sold her house for $700K. Yeah. But grandma needs like $52,000 a year to live. So she has 700, whatever numbers are, the numbers don't matter.
So then what do you not like about it? It goes back to, remember we used to have people on who were Brady collectors in the Northeast. And I was like, can you just admit you were lucky? Like you happened to be born when Brady was the quarterback, you bought your cards of him, you held them, you might've gone to college and forgot about it. You come back and all of a sudden, boom, you got millions of dollars worth of cards. That doesn't make you some sort of a genius, right? But the flip side to that then becomes, the people like you who came in after that didn't have the luck of that, right? It's like me who was born.
May have had some of the luck.
Collecting Drew Bledsoe instead of Tom Brady, right? The timing was just wrong, right? So do you feel like the hobby looks down on those folks? Like the hobby is comprised of this pocket of people, the segment of people who may have gotten lucky. And you know what? Maybe they made their own luck. You've talked about that too. But they look at the younger people who came in and didn't have the ability to just sell their stuff and make millions, And he looked down and said, what the hell are you doing?
I think there's a tendency to get jealous and envy. And I'll say that because I probably have gotten it myself and it probably came through in the content. But I think jealousy and envy is for sure, because who doesn't want financial freedom? Like, I think it's complete illusion. I think you've set yourself so far back if you're just not even willing to admit that. Because everyone wants financial freedom. Everyone wants their house paid off. Everyone wants to have land. Everyone wants to travel. You know, it might look different, but everyone wants financial freedom. And when you see on Instagram people, you know, who have million-dollar cards or million-dollar sellouts, right, of those cards, mm-hmm. and they bought that card for 5 years earlier for, you know, 100,000, whatever the numbers are, they're like, damn, what would I do with a mil? Because I can't even probably afford rent. And I have a credit card bill of $15,000. So I think
human nature, by the way, loses
reality. I think they lose like the sense of reality. And prices have gone way up on everything, but like there's just a sense of reality that, dude, life costs money, and a lot more money than it cost 5 years ago for sure.
All right. Well, I mean, listen, if the human nature to be jealous, I could tell you, I went on a live with Gio and he asked how you're doing. And I said, I just talked to you. You had an exit from your company. I got a bunch of DMs. I know how you love when I talk about it. Give me the details. He had an exit. He sold his company. He did that. How much did he make? And I'm like, I don't friggin' know. Like, I don't ask that. But people, I think that goes to what you're talking about. It's not these people. I don't want to say jealous or envious, but like, yeah, part of it is the world we live in, right? Like, it's so easy to flex. It's so easy to get on Instagram and like, look at my collection. I paid $4 for this $3 million Michael Jordan PC in my Zion case, and you're like, shit, how do I get there, right? And you know, I get what you're saying.
Well, but think about even that statement. Like, it's so easy for me to say I had an exit, right? And it could look cool. And I could actually just let it there. But like, if you sell an app, or you sell a grading company, or you sell a landscape company, you could say you sold all three of them. And those are all exits.
Yep.
But the multiple on that number is going to be way different for a landscaping company than you're selling an app, than you're selling a grading company.
Yep.
So like for last year, I was doing dog services, mobile dog services.
Yep.
Go to a person's house, you give the dog a haircut, you charge like 100 to 150 bucks, and you leave. But it's just straight cash. It's like, it's a basic service business. You're not going to get a high multiple on that. So why I'm selling is we're moving into a new house, a new facility that's going to have like a training, like a real training facility for dogs. And I wanted to deploy the money I had here over there. So is it an exit?
It's an exit of one piece of it. And now you're putting that money back in, investing in yourself into the part that I think you probably enjoy the most. And you could build that one up even bigger. And maybe there's a bigger exit down the road there. It's kind of the way it works, right?
So is it an exit? I mean, it sounds good. Yeah. But like when you're in it and you're like kind of like figuring it out, like, I mean, it's not an SGC to PSA exit.
No. Right?
That's an exit.
But by the way, is it? We don't know what the terms of that were.
But yeah, I mean, you do, because you like you could sit at home and you could look at the gem rate post and say, okay, they grade 100,000 cards a month. Mm-hmm. They charge $15 a card. They probably have 20 graders. Then you just run some vague numbers and you could figure out what they're making a year. It's not like
any of those grades were free.
Okay. So you're right. You're right. You have to sort of. But a lot of my grooms were free in the beginning. That's how I got a lot of my customers. Those turned to paying customers.
Yeah.
So it's like, but you're going to get a rough number. You're not going to get exactly under SGC's books. They're a vault there. They wouldn't even trust me to go.
Do you know what kind of multiple on the revenue they get? The point is that I mean, I heard people
a say lot higher on a grading company than a service.
They got $100 million. They didn't get $100. I don't even want to speculate on it, but I mean, it's an interesting thing to see. Even as we're talking now, too.
We have some intelligent listeners that I guarantee will give us, like, they'll say this type of business. We have a ton of listeners. I'm so arrogant. they'll say these types of businesses sell for this to this times EBITDA. This type of business sells for this times this. A grading company is amazing. It's like an assembly line. No?
Some of them. I mean, you look at Gem Mint, obviously some assembly lines do different things than other companies do. You know
what I mean? Someone's got to do God's work. Only God could save Beckett at this point.
I mean, listen, they don't want to save themselves. Right? We worked with a bunch of different grading companies, and they are not all the same, man. They are not. I always say that. They are not all the same. It is what it is. But I mean, obviously the, you know, the unquestioned king there, PSA, you know why they're so great? Because they just wouldn't work with us. They were smart enough to stay away.
All right, how much customer acquisition do they really need, you know?
I mean, I got my magazine today. I was reading it. It's amazing to see. I know, you know, you came into space, you know, several years ago, but there are people doing really well who I would say got their start with you booking them on the show. Or they were starting, and I'm sure they might have been in the same spot.
It's funny, I had the same message for you actually coming on here.
Yeah, I got nothing. You're the one who created it. I didn't know what you had to tell me what a podcast was. But I'm not successful. I open up the PSA, and here's your jealousy and envy. I was a PSA magazine. They're not doing a spot about me, but you know who's in this month's? Mama Breaks. Remember we had her on real early, still teaching. You know, I mean, it is.
You know, Mama Breaks' greatest skill. She's a racehorse. She has blinders on. I have never seen Mama Breaks give any attention to any drama.
Yes, it's true. And I've actually spoken to her about that. And I said to her, I said, you know what? As you get more successful,
locked in,
it's going to be harder to be completely consistently loved. And yet, she's done a great job with it. She really has. She really has. You know, it's fun to watch, especially because part of that jealousy and envy comes out, right? Because there are probably people out there who read that magazine and say, like, I could do this. I know better. But you know what? Then do it.
Yeah. Dude, Mama Breaks, when I saw her at Mint last year, it was like, you know, the line for Starbucks, how crazy it was. She was coming back from her workout at like 7:30 a.m. when everyone was just like kind of like waking up. She's already got her workout in. She's already done a stream. Like, she took it seriously. So, you know, I don't know. I didn't know she was in the magazine. That's pretty cool. I guess that's like the – if you make it in the PSA magazine, it's like the
– I mean, it literally was – it came in the mail.
Mama made it.
10 minutes before we started, I opened it up because, you know, I just came out. Let me see what's in it. And, yeah, there's a whole special about, you know, about her, like, you know, article, the whole deal. All right, dude. So, I mean, people are not going to stay tuned for this long. You know how it is. You know, the attention spans are not there. But, you know, it's your first time back on with anything to say here. I mean, you know, you could talk about anything you want. I mean, you come back tomorrow. I don't, you know, I'll have you on every day. If you want, we could do this daily. We can literally do a show every single day if you want it.
It's a standing offer?
It's, yeah, every single
day. Is that an irrevocable bid?
It is, which means you have to get a piece of the upside. If you agree, that's how this works. No, but so I'm going to throw one out there. And feel free to say, screw you, Cage. I'm not answering it. Because you owe no one. You owe nothing to anyone. You owe nothing. There are a lot of people who miss you. I still get DMs from people saying, I love your show. I don't watch it as religiously as I did when Andrew was on. I miss him. It is a very different show. I learn from you. You know, I'll watch 4 or 5 episodes at once if I'm on a trip, or I'll listen to it. But it's not like must. When you had Andrew on, it was must see TV because you guys fed off of each other. There was a lot of, you know, of admiration for a long time. People saying, you know, what do you, you know, get him back on. You know, we love hearing you. You know what you're doing. But it, for lack of a better way to summarize the DMs, people said that you challenged me and that you got things out of me in a point counterpoint that I don't do on my own because I come in and I talk, whereas you would rile me up. You would get me angry. You would make me make jokes. You'd force me to take a drink of soda, punch myself in the head. And sometimes you need that, right? We've talked about like the, maybe Jordan wouldn't have been Jordan if he didn't have the Pistons beating the shit out of him. You know what I mean? And I'm not comparing myself to Jordan, and you're not exactly Joe Dumars or Isaiah Thomas, but you get the analogy. But there are people who have missed you.
On the same team?
Yeah. There are people who – yeah. So
wouldn't I be like the Steve Kerr that you punched in the eye, asshole?
Or
am I Tex Winner, who you know I adore, and you could have given me that compliment easily. The creator of the triangle offense.
You like weird people, though. You like, who was that fat guy you like who trained Kobe and they gave him a horrible card in the sky?
Tim Grover?
He's not fat. Right? Like, he looks huge in that card. No, so I think it'd be more, honestly, for me and you, if we're really giving a real analogy, you're Jordan Poole and I'm Draymond.
You're an idiot. Would I do it again? I would do it better this time.
No.
Is that what you're asking?
No, I was going to say, like, you know, you know, people are going to want to know where you've been. People are going to want to know why come back now. People are going to want to know, you know, hey, you know, are you back for good? Or do you want to come back in a hobby? You, like I said, you don't owe anybody anything. But I caveat this with there have been people who have also just disappeared from the hobby very unceremoniously for different reasons. People kind of lump you in with the other folks who have sort of like kind of vanished, right? Like Shay Wei Vlogs. He was show bidding and, you know, the therapist who was like mega bidding and, you know, so, you know what I mean? Like, you know, so.
You guys are so silly in this face.
Yeah, right? But so even them, if they came back, like, who cares? You know, so, I mean, the point being, like, I leave it to you, man. I mean, you know, you miss it. Don't miss it. You know, you miss the people. You want people to start DMing you again and asking you for, you know, for life advice. Like, you know, where are you?
There's two things. Like, what you miss is the feeling, right? We're all kind of chasing a feeling. And you miss, what's cool about having a podcast is that you get a feeling of expression.
Yep.
I really, like, I want to create dog training content. I'm kind of thinking about how to, like, do it. I don't like face-to-camera content. I just, it's not fun for me. Like, but I love banter because this was always my childhood. Like, we would sit around the dinner table and argue about stuff that does not matter. You know, some yep. people that's sports, other people it's politics, other people it's like Food Channel, whatever. I definitely miss banter. Banter's yep. fun, man. Yep. What I don't miss is trying to take on too much because here's the Andrew isn't good at like hiding his emotions. So like yes. when I come on frustrated, that's not the best version of Andrew, you know? Yep. And the frustrations could be so many things, right? So it could be maybe just someone said something and it rubbed you the wrong way. Or you feel misunderstood, right? Or you're trying to grow this thing and you're not leading the right way. And you're like, how can I be better? You want to be better, but like, so you're kind of learning on the fly. Then you have life. You have, so like, I hate frustrated Andrew. I could improve frustrated Andrew when doing these things. But I love banter. I love banter. I love
frustrated, right? The space was frustrating. I mean, prices were coming down. You were learning on the fly. And by learning, you were losing money, which is never a good thing. And I'm dragging your ass to do content every single day, which, I mean, you can be as honest as you want. You do not want to do everyday content. And look, I'm not doing everyday content either. You know,
but it's not just the content. Like, it's people don't realize, like, you did a great job at this. People really look up to you. Like, the people behind the scenes that help the content really get disseminated, because this is 58 minutes. No one wants to listen to this. They want to listen to 12 60-second clips from here, yeah. right? And then if they really like it, they might go listen to that full episode. But still, having to like ask people on a low budget, because what this doesn't pay anything.
Correct.
To want to do that, I could be better at that. But it's just a lot of work. It's a lot of emotional effort. Just showing up and talking is easy, you know?
You like, love Manny. Manny helped us. He did those things.
I'm very grateful to every single one of them. Dude, I talked. Manny called me the other, like maybe 2 months ago. Jordan Ferrone. Like, if you guys don't follow Jordan Ferrone, I think last I checked, 1.1 million followers.
Yeah, for following Jordan, though, because you're going to wind up buying an ice bath and really getting into that whole thing.
Well, dude, we did the show every single day, right? Jordan was like the first guy that signed up. He's like, dude, I'll help you guys.
Yep.
Made amazing content. Argued with me amazingly well as well.
You guys
then did the ice bath. He yep. does it every single day. So like, pretty cool. And you, dude, you encouraged him. So like a lot. I'm very grateful to the people behind the scenes that helped put on the production of Lucas Tigers and Bronze, because it wasn't just us.
No, actually, very little. I mean, behind the scenes, 90% of this stuff was you and the team building the stuff. Yeah. I just had to show up and be an idiot and drink soda.
Alex was amazing as well. Alex was dope because he didn't talk a lot and we couldn't get in arguments.
Listen, it was a long, fun ride. Remember Conrad? Love that kid. I mean, interesting, right?
That was when kids didn't go to school, right? That was interesting because he's like 14. So, like, during COVID, you don't go to school, and then you do.
Well, listen.
Anyone want this Michael Cage card?
Of course. I'll take it. Is it going to be a 10?
Nah. Yeah.
Yes. Great. Well, guys, listen. I hope you enjoyed this. It was completely unplanned. Andrew made some posts. I like some posts. I gave him some shit on some posts. People are calling us out on the posts. And I text him. I'm like, dude, come on. He's like, 5 minutes, let's go. And I will, hopefully he doesn't get mad. I've asked him before and he never said yes. He finally said yes. So all you guys, and you know who you are,
get it. It wasn't a no, it was like not the right time, but yeah.
Correct. Not the right time. And you know, it just, sometimes it takes a little internet, you know, spats. By the way,
you're very gracious, by the way. Like, you're willing to have anybody on. You don't like, a lot of people gatekeep who they would have on. You know what I mean? So,
I mean, I'm just not good at it. If people are wondering, hey, how come Cage doesn't have more guests on and do talk and stuff like this? It's because I'm not even good at like scheduling and sending out invites. Like even that stuff, you know, that was not something that I did. So
that's the thing I missed is I see you mentioned Gio and Jesse. I see them on Fanatics Live.
Yes.
Didn't they start a competing application?
They did.
To Fanatics Live?
Yes. And it folded.
No more Card Shop Live? Is Whatnot still a thing?
Whatnot is still a thing. Although,
would you say 50-50 market share Fanatics Live to Whatnot?
No.
What would you go?
I think Whatnot is significantly less than 50%. Because
really? You think Fanatics Live in 1 year took over that much market share? Put a competitor out of business and took that much business
from listen, so I'm not a breaker. So we can talk about the hobby, we can talk about the cards, we can talk about Joe Montana, we can talk about all this stuff, and I can speak with authority. The one space that I don't know the inner workings and the whole deal is that breaking, and I think that is the future of this hobby for the next, you know, foreseeable future. And it is not behind the scenes, I don't know, just because I don't do it, right? But I know that Fanatics wants their people who are getting their product on their platform. I'm not saying that they are banning those people from breaking on other platforms. But, you know, if you want to break Bowman,
you don't want to rub Robert Kraft the wrong way.
If you want to break Bowman, you should go to Blez, right? You go to Blez or Daddy Rips. Now Daddy Rips and Blez are combining to rip Bowman together. And, yeah, that's from this week, too. And that's on Fanatics Live. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying – I don't know whether or not those guys can go break on Whatnot. I don't know. You know, I'm sure they're allowed, but I don't know whether or not just, you know, they don't want to because they still get so much product and, you know, they want to continue to get all the product from Tops. And, you know, I don't know. Backyard still breaks, right? And Backyard's breaking all over the place, but I don't see them breaking much in the way of Tops products. A little bit here and there, I see them doing more. Like, I saw, you know, a pull today of a Wemby Gold. And they do their own, you know, repacks. I'm sure that's done on Whatnot. There's still plenty on Whatnot. I still see that. But for the most part, the bigger breakers that I'm seeing are Fanatics Live breakers, including, I think, Gio is one of their bigger breakers now. You know, volume-wise, I think he's one of their bigger breakers. Remember, he was a breaker before. He was a breaker before the podcast. He had a breaking before this. That's why I think they tried to do the Card Shop Live. Breaking is an area I want to learn more about. It really is. Only because not that I'm a fan of it, not that I love it. It is, for lack of a better way of saying it, that is where we're going. So to speak with any authority about the hobby, you really have to understand breaking and understand the nuance of it, understand the platforms, understand what's going on.
They're the guys that stand on the corner slanging it though. Like there's a guy in Brooklyn, there's a guy in Queens, there's a guy in Manhattan, a few in Chinatown, but they're just guys corner slanging product. The big guy is American Gangster, Lucas.
But the thing is,
Lucas Rubin.
What Lucas did was he consolidated so that you didn't need someone on every corner. You could have one guy who covered four corners and still sell enough and not need four people out there. And remember the hobby, we've always talked about consolidation in the space. You talk about consolidating your own PC, talk about consolidating hobby brands, talk about consolidating, you know, now the grading companies are consolidating. You've seen auction houses consolidate. Breaking consolidation, I mean, it goes to, you know, it stands to reason that's next. And yet those
You know who's similar to Mama Breaks in that like nothing sticks to him? Like, how has there not been questions? And maybe we'll wrap right after I say this.
I know.
For the white party that Mr. Rubin throws.
Is it a cliffhanger?
Some of the guests that show up there. Like, Fanatics makes products for the hobby. And I'm interested that the hobby never called them out on those white parties, man. Some of the characters in there.
I mean, you just don't like that they all wear white?
Yeah, that's probably some of that.
Well, guys,
all over their faces, right?
Is what? Yeah. Here's the thing, right? What I will tell you is this: this was a long time coming. A lot of you asked for this. I love this guy. I think he brings out the best in me and sometimes the worst in me, and you know that'll give the best kind of content for you. So that's why you love it. But I enjoyed having you on. Thank you for agreeing to do this, man. I think the folks will be happy to know that you're in, you know, good health. You can just see it the way you look. You look great. People, you know, happy to hear that, you know, you started your own business and that you're still doing that. You're happy. You're still, you know, watching the hobby. You're still paying attention to it. You still know what's going on. You still have some cards on your desk as we record this. And guys, you can let me know. You want to see this guy more?
For sure. If you're in Florida and you want to get your dog trained, call me.
Go ahead. Give a plug. Hell, we give plugs for everybody else. What's the name of the company? Tell them where they can find it.
The name is amazing. My sister helped me with all the branding. It's called Happy Go Lucky.
Happy Go Lucky. That's dog it. Company. Happy Go Lucky Dog Company. Look it up, guys. Follow him. If you're not following him on, you know, on IG, there it is right there. A little yellow with the dog in front of it. And give him a follow on the new stuff. Maybe we'll see him again. Maybe we won't. I don't know. We'll see what happens. Talk to you guys soon. Thank you. Thanks, man.